Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the writer Richard Blevins. Richard Blevins is the editor of two volumes of the Charles Olson Robert Creeley correspondence, published by Black Sparrow Press. He is the author of 8 books of poetry. The most recent are Fogbow Bridge, Selected Poems, 1972 to 1999, Castle Tubin, Captivity Narratives, and his new book entitled Breathing Bolaño, a collaboration with the writer Todd Thilleman. Hi, Rich. How are you?
Hi.
It's good to have you here from Greensburg.
Thank you.
And you have a lot of books, but you're going to read from your new one, which is a really interesting setup here. So maybe you'll tell us about that during the interview sometime.
Well, actually, maybe I should start there because people who've looked at the book tend to dive into the middle of it. So this book is a collaboration, as you just indicated, a serial poem from Todd and one from me on Bolaño. We were both stuck in projects that weren't going forward, and in our own email correspondence, which was pretty heavy for a few months, we urged each other on in our projects. So we wrote the thing sort of simultaneously, and then I had the sense that it might be designed as a book to actually have our correspondence in the middle selected. And that's where people usually start in the book, they say, by the way. So that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I mean, the great thing about arts and letters, Todd once said, was the letters. So anyhow, I know that skews the meaning a little bit. But and then a collaboration in the sense also of a literary collaboration with, you know, sort of the conversation I never got to have with Roberto Bolaño, one of the great writers of my generation, who dies in, you know, at the age of 50 in 2003. So I never got to have this conversation with him or this correspondence with him. And so I enacted that, maybe a little bit like Jack Spicer with the Lorca poem. I enacted that in the book. Okay. So maybe that's the background.
Okay, sure. Okay, so you're going to read from the book?
Yeah.
Okay.
To set this up, also, I guess, a corrido is a Mexican folk song, still a popular form of hero making in the South. As a matter of fact, in the book, I quote Hart Crane complaining about this. He said that everywhere he went, this is from a letter from Hart Crane from 1932. There are endless corridas about poor Pancho Villa, Zapata, and other dead revolutionaries, he complains. And I got the term, I think, from Cormac McCarthy's novels, and I thought, yeah, maybe the form of, writing about a folk legend, maybe I could use that with Bolaño as a sort of, as a form, really, to play against. And so maybe I'd start with part of the first poem, and this was the poem that got stalled for a couple of years until Todd and I had a project, Sedan Cordillo. Because you are dead, Roberto Bolaño, you seem much older, but we make contemporaries. Because your countries seem old, because the version of the new world I live in died young and happy with itself, you send me news of the revolt I believed imminent years ago. Because I don't understand your language, your poems are a university of forbidden reading. I dip my finger, now my tongue, into the inkwell of the common night to write you this. I begin to hear your jet lines without the necessity of reading them. America can never build a wall at the border to keep you out or deport you. Because as long as a student dreams of becoming a poet, and enrolls in workshops he skips in order to smoke and read the poems of Rex Roth, you are America. Because I already knew you when we were coming up and first read Lorca in New York, together leagues apart, I don't want you translated. The year is 2666. The year is 1968. It's getting too late to learn the piano. I'd like just 20 minutes with you, alone with your admirable hatred for Neruda. I too would no more memorize a poem by heart than eat my map. And all creators of cantos and cant, whose periplum are ghost towns, streets of long-abandoned unburied horrors, and you and your abiding love for the anti-poet para, good food for the growing poet. I'd bring the bottle, pretend to smoke your bali, but you'd find me out right off. The VWs of Mexico cruise by our sullen table, engines like sewing machines. All my beautiful questions would go unasked. After that, urine absorbed into the hotter desert floor, into the grammar of spiders, renewing their vows of silence. Bolaño's afterlife. As if the tree flew itself south to escape what is only natural, through and through itself finally to where the poet listens. It is the morning of listening. For what noise or voice this burning bush, butterflies for wings, tells him. He sees for himself all the pretty monarchs are devouring something big. Big as a tree, shivering in no wind. The swarm takes the shape of a target, Zapata's hat on a branch, until only insects are left. Then, one by one, they too leave, flown into that night when not every light rising from the desert is a UFO. This is an interview with Roberto Bolaño in the Spicer sense, and my initials are RB as well. So the following interview may have taken place on May 22nd, 2009, in a hospital or a cemetery in Mexico or Spain in Spanish or English. The dead writer's appearance was not prepared for by the interviewer's diligent reading about ghosts in popular novels of so-called magic realism. The present text has not been transcribed. It simply showed up in the email one morning. How does it feel to be famous? Always hungry. How does it feel to be a ghost? Never hungry. Where are you buried? At the universities. When you write, are you Chilean or Mexican? I am a ghost. What are you working on? I'm returning to poetry full time. Why is it that your narratives tend to envelop instead of develop? Without knowing, I had caught a glimpse of the woman who would soon be my wife is the sort of lie we make to ourselves and come to believe when we write novels. In the current Nazi Reich in America, why should we go on publishing and reading books? The next mouth you kiss will be the first one, the next book you buy. What is the relationship between travel and your vision? At the rear of their cemetery stands the town's last outhouse AAA guidebook. How does baseball figure into your work? Raised seams for throwing. What do you most hate about being a ghost? Octavio Paz. What advice would you give the new MFAs? Abandon the writing of poems before it's too late. Write to me sometimes your most secret thoughts. They are not poems, and I have nowhere to publish them. Do you have a question for me? Yes. Where are all these questions going? Colossus West. If Texas wants a wall, why not buy one? Bring in the great Walmart of China, unit between the massive thighs of London Bridge, Vegas. It's a brilliant formula for merger, first floated by Gadsden, involving a long history of keeping out the others, plus a little something to bring them back.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the writer Richard Blevins, and he's reading from his new book, Breathing Bolaño. I was struck by the by a lot of the lines you're reading, but in particular, Inkwell of the Common Night. I really like that, and I wondered if you might consider that a credo for the book, this idea of common ground and collaboration with another writer and talking to another dead writer. So yeah. I wonder how you look at that commonality in the book as it has, you know, as it lives and breathes in its current form and in its finished form, because it sort of stops everything in a way, stops the collaboration, the you know, there's this feeling of movement between you and Todd Thilleman, and this movement between you and Bolaño. So I wonder how you feel about the stopping of that in by putting it down.
Only a poet would have that line in their head. Seriously. I love that. And you're right. You know, I've never met Todd. We email, like, you know, during the heavy going, we were emailing 20 pages a day back and forth. I've never met him. So collaboration and correspondence come to mean something else in the age of email. We know that. When I was a young man, Robert Duncan, I would visit Robert in San Francisco, and Robert would say, you know, you have to move to San Francisco. You know that, don't you, to be a poet. And I think probably that might have been true when he was telling me that in 1970. Perhaps in this era, perhaps considering how Todd publishes books and how people buy books. I mean, the very act of buying a book now is so simple and very difficult in 1970, really. You went to City Lights Bookstore. So that nature has changed, but I've always been a traditionalist, not to laugh. But I mean, when I say that, people faint, but I mean, I consider poetry to be an experiment in language. However, I have always written in a tradition very self-consciously, so that I feel as if I am collaborating in the strictest sense, in one that's meaningful to me, at any rate, and one that I would understand that gave me these poems. I am collaborating and corresponding with not just Todd, certainly him, but with Bolaño in the straight sense. I got to know Bolaño I read a couple novels, but by thinking about him, I don't know, is the right word, meditating on him? I don't know where you go when you write these poems. But yeah, I mean, I feel as if now I'm not ready to teach a class on Bolaño. That's another kind of thinking. But yeah, there's a correspondence there and a meeting place there.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about what drove you to write the book, and what, you know, it's a lot to, you know, to get this invested in another writer.
Right.
What about him and his work made you this passionate about it?
I immediately got, I think, the sense of what he was after, and I don't mean this as a critic, but as a poet, as someone, you know, you picked out the line about the night, and somebody with that kind of insight. Bolaño's novels, as I read them, are about the era in which poets, well, I'll be specific with his novels, poets in his novels are always sitting around tables talking about poems. They're never writing poems. This culture that, you know, we're in which people want to be poets still, that's a hopeful thing. But, I mean, what's really going on? So, you know, I thought, yeah, he's right to write that. I think he's a representative writer, certainly for somebody my age, approaching 60, thinking about what is our topic anyhow. We wanted to be writers, and now we wake up. He lived to be 50. I'm looking at 60. What is it? What does that mean now? And what does that mean in our particular culture? I think he speaks to that. He was also an activist, Chilean, you know, born in Santiago, moves with his family, his parents, to Mexico City, goes back in 1973 during the Allende years, as an activist. That interested me. As a student, I was an undergraduate at Kent State in 1970. So political activism certainly attracts me, and I can hear it there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Could you read some more poems?
Oh, sure. Maybe this is the poem that follows that notion of activism, whatever form that takes today. It seems to me that this studio and this beautiful building is a form of doing something active in a society. I'm delighted to see this kind of activity going on. At any rate,
it's a green building.
Yeah, it's the green building, I understand. So yeah. Okay, so let's try this one then. June 5th, 2009 is the title. The sound of a fist, of a car striking a movable wall again and again. Hear the sedan's nightmare border crossing. From Hermosillo, the news is all bad. 28 children, 6 months to 3 years, asphyxiated in the daycare fire, burned horribly in the ABC fire. Mothers cry children's names into the fire. The fires, not the sun, glint off lances, knives, gun barrels, trumpets, belt buckles, bottles brought to the desert and here abandoned for the uses of archaeologists in their continued studies of the dead. These dead unmake me a father, no longer the poet. I can't stand to write on this subject for the book's last poem. Corrido singers will have to do it. I'm just weeping. They shall exhale songs. Will they sing 35 or just one? Narratives become ungrammatical. We expect the young to outlive the old. Even the son's death will need witnesses. We live out our days eclipsed by the dead children that we were and still resemble. All the characters in the kids' cartoon El Tigre are drawn like Santos, only they're animated by the computers, exaggerating adult childishness, how youth is immune when we think of death. Large discrepancies among the lifespans make a statistical average tourist. A few days ago, the last survivor of Titanic died at 98 years. 9-week-old infant Melvina Dean fit into a mail sack. Of her greatest night, she recalled nothing. Don't say none of this matters. Everything matters because God turned his back to us. The dead children are not his, they're ours. I will not update the numbers of dead beyond 51. When the skin is burned, there is no border against infection. The temperature of the charred body goes out of control. Its skinless surface must be scoured daily. There is no border where pain is exiled. The cruelty is there was only one door for the building, one space to run through. One dad bashed his car at the wall until, borderline insane, he made a new door. Read now from a section called 88 Clues. Bolaño writes often in the guise of mystery. The Savage Detectives, I think, was the first book I read from him. And so I wrote a series of short poems that are clues with the epigraph, "If I Die, the Dying's Over," from Jack Kerouac. Sort of a topical theme as well about the swine flu. Written back in the spring, you'll remember, when we were more or less reading about the swine flu rather than experiencing it in our county. Swine flu shut down schools, museum, kissing. Across Sonora, 75 dead. No need to visit to write this poem. Their dis-ease is ours and mine already. Virus in us sleeps, interrupted talk, poems sleep in us, dream conversations. If you choose to cross the desert at night, you will take with you memories of darkness. Abby are the brave. Doc Williams says Pound caught the virus of democracy, and it went to his head. Defenseless border without a membrane to keep out the new killer narrative, already learning to speak good Anglo. Blue surgical masks, dialogue filters, a a row of bottles reflecting bottles.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the writer Richard Blevins, and he's reading from his new book, Breathing Bolaño. I want to ask about this idea of translation. Earlier in one of the poems you read, or I'm not sure, maybe it was part of, I think it was part of the poems or the letters. I don't know. It's losing track.
That's good. That means the text is working. It's interlinear, you know?
Yeah. Well, anyway, there was a moment where it said, I don't want you translated.
Yeah.
And which I thought was really interesting. And but I'm wondering, isn't this response to Bolaño a kind of translation, even if you're saying, you know, Bolaño writes in the guise of mystery and you're offering clues? Maybe it's more of a response than a translation, but isn't there an inherent translation in that act?
Yeah, I think maybe it's translation in the corrupted sense that, you know, Pound gave us, and who is, you know, still to this day criticized by sinologists because he didn't get the Chinese right. Well, no, I mean, he made poems from them, I think maybe that is an act of translation in the broadest sense. I just wanted to eat up Bolaño and have it. Mm-hmm. And in that way, come to grips with, I mean, the guy's a cult figure. You know, I read about him in the New York Times before I read him, which mm-hmm. is pretty bad if you think about it. And people are saying that about the book. I mean to read Bolaño, by the way. And so they'll never get it with this book from me, though, because as you say, it's a translation. It's not Bolaño. Mm-hmm. Maybe everybody's going to have their Bolaño if the culture doesn't eat him up, you mm-hmm. know? I'm afraid that might happen, in fact, if we don't claim parts of him.
Right. Well, this act of eating him up eating up writers who we love.
Yeah. I didn't continue the rest of that metaphor, by the way.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. But, you know, doesn't it bring up questions of in the integrity of the original writer's work, as in, you know, necessarily we invade in a sense as readers and when we're collaborating, because, you know, all we have is what we can glean, what we can understand from the writing, and so isn't there always some kind of corruption in the large sense going?
Yeah, I really believe that. I don't think it's corruption, of course, puts a negative turn to it that I didn't really intend. You know,
maybe a change instead of corruption.
It changes.
An alteration.
It does. It does. It morphs it, doesn't it? But I write criticism too, and it's my understanding, and I think it's healthy that, you know, critics do this too.
Oh, yes,
I mean, why
do.
Did Emily Dickinson change in 1960, right? So, I mean, she wasn't part of the canon when I was a young man.
Well, that's another conversation.
It is another conversation. But, you know, so look, the criticism isn't established either. And so what do we do with Bolaño? What do? We make him ours. And my poems are based in, I smiled, but you're so perceptive because, in fact, there is a confusion between his text, my text. You know, they're supposed to be.
Yes.
And it's the interlinear. I mean, Hanayo Long, a great Pittsburgh figure, right? I mean, gave me that understanding of how a text can be interlinear and how we might study and also be poets. Not that the poem is an essay, but it's eating everything you can find. And, right? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Could you read some more?
Yeah. I think I'll continue in the, and I'll give you some more clues is what I should say. Souvenir matchbox, advertised reprise, gloved hands of drinkers, both feet off the floor. After they finish, their table is burned. I'm infected, and my computer, a bug from the air, a bug in my ear. X from cyberspace. It has already killed in Sonora. Serial killer. Aztec knife. The flu. Latest reports warn it knows no borders. It comes your way. It will seem water to your swollen tongue. This clue has a subtitle. It's called Search Committee. And if you've ever served in one of those, you already know the background for the poem. Ebrard ordered schools, swimming pools, pool halls, and museums closed. Restaurants, meantime, may serve takeout meals. Ameliorate your chances. Take none. Suspend the kissing of crucifixes. Get in the habit of washing your hands. Put off making plans. Cancel reunions. Disinfect bullfights. Go to the empty baseball stadium. Abstain from licking stamps in the P.O. Blow kisses. Wink eye. Think yourself lucky. Drink only bottles. Use ink pens to paint black socks on ankles so one poet can pass for the many. Avoid poverty like rubbing the eyes. In place of faces, blue tarantulas. Cover mouths like hands. Only the eyes show baby blue panic. There is no end to Bull Burrow's bad news. No one is immune. The virus victim, having once succumbed, falls in love again. Detective routine brought Ellington down to the city morgue to identify some murdered body, last seen lost in dance on a night Duke played with his jungle band to Larka's table at the Cotton Club. There are a lot of, to maybe get out of the flu and death poems. Okay. There, baseball, man, I got to read about Mexican Baseball League, okay? And I really want to go to a Mexican Baseball League game, by the way, but okay. And so there are a lot of baseball poems in here. Maybe this one to begin. Tech Baseball, T-E-C. How I love to see the old men fighting. Stiff neck coming out a boy's jersey top. The fat manager must be suffering. Deep cuts, decades old, at the bloody hands of this umpire's dad. The game loses all continuity. Umpires always win. Catcher and pitcher in front of the crowd. Glove-covered faces during a timeout. Talk to each other about what to do. The pitcher's blue glove, the catcher's blue cap. A coach joins them. His face is too big. The umpire walks out carrying his mask. Wordlessly, they leave the lonely pitcher.
It's the writing of Richard Blevins, and he's reading from his new book, Breathing Bolaño. Thank you so much. It was really fun.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7 for Prosody, 91.3 WYEP.